You may have heard of us, but you might not know Bank First is a community bank that has no fee ATM access, interest and perks earning checking accounts. With online and mobile banking, mortgages for every stage of life, and modern business banking for businesses, small and big. We keep it all together to put you first. Do you bank with us? You should. Bank First is an equal housing lender and a member FDIC.
Well, welcome to Sunday Coffee. I'm Bart Gregory along with Charlie Winfield and Lewis Creekmore going to sit in with us this morning. Add a little third voice.
Back by popular demand.
He was here Friday?
No, it was last Sunday morning.
I was here Saturday morning.
Saturday morning. That's right.
Because I was here Sunday.
Yes.
Like, telephonically.
So we did Saturday morning and got a few comments and, man, had y'all upgrade. Keep Bart overseas. Should travel more.
If you only knew just how close and how easy it would be to talk me into moving back over there, yeah, I could do it in a heartbeat. There's a lot of great golf courses around where I was. I could hang on the golf course all the time, call in here. What was great about last week, Lewis, is Charlie came in here first thing Sunday morning, and one of the hardest things for me to do is get up early on Sunday morning to come up here and get in the studio. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was 8 o'clock here last Sunday.
See, you were hitting your stride.
I was hitting the stride last week for Sunday Coffee. Now, the thing that I didn't have is I didn't have my big cup of Strange Brew coffee last week. I was working off a French press last week is what I was, even though I was not in France. But there is no way I could have had any better coffee over there than I have this morning. My blueberry cobbler-flavored coffee this morning. I had to get back in the swing of things this morning with my blueberry cobbler-flavored coffee.
Well, that's understandable for a guy like you.
Yeah, feel good.
Told you Southern Pecan gets the favorable reviews from my friend Ted out in Dallas.
Right. I see you got your tall boy this morning.
No, stop that. Like, you do not know how many people come up to me and say thank you for making him stop calling it a tall boy coffee.
It's a large. It's an extra large.
Yeah, it's large. Do you want cream or sugar? No.
No. Hey, we've won the first two against Alabama. Oh, before we go there, let's talk about Strange Brew. Strange Brew now with 3 locations, Starkville, Spring Street, and Highway 12. Of course, Churn and Spoon Ice Cream is hot enough now for ice cream. And that's the perfect place to go after the game today. Got a noontime game, be over at 3 o'clock. That means 3:30. You can be getting some of that butter pecan ice cream from our good friends at Churn and Spoon. Strange Brew Coffee House in Tupelo and in Tuscaloosa as well. All right, Sunday Coffee. State's won the first two against Alabama. Friday, 13-3. Come back yesterday. And, you know, Alabama, a little bit depleted. I don't want to take anything away from our win at all, though.
Hey, let me reset here for a moment. Last Saturday, when Lewis and I sat here, we weren't terribly happy. Lewis is about ready to throw the towel in on the guys. Is that fair?
That's more than fair.
And what, we got two hit the night before?
Yeah, two hit tonight.
Two hit while only striking out 4 times.
Which tells you you did hit, put the ball in play.
How about that? Back-to-back Friday games, combined strikeouts by our hitters, 7.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, Friday night, the thing we have been able to – and just looking at stats and all this stuff and coming up here today, the thing that has stood out to me, and we've talked about Cal Steven and how he has, you know, pitched this entire season – Gerangelo yesterday, and I know we'll talk more about Gerangelo in that outing yesterday, but here's what you're beginning to see, and one of the differences between us and a lot of other schools, and this is what makes me feel good about even getting into postseason play, is we've got some starting pitching that could set up well for a tournament. Now, we're also the type of team, back to what you were thinking about Lewis last week, I think we're also the type of team that could lose to a 4 seed in a tournament. But we're also a team that could run through a regional pretty good too.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, kind of going back to your point with we've got the starting pitching, which is, you know, crazy to say if you look back from years past. It almost, like, once we get into regional play, you almost want to just win the first 3. Like, just as you would in any series, because, you know, you're starting to see Pico Khan kind of come into that 4th starter guy. But, you know, it also, we just got our 3rd starter in Brooks Auger because, I mean, up until Auburn and then, of course, with Vanderbilt last weekend, you really didn't know who that Sunday guy was going to be. But, yeah, I agree. I think with, you know, with our starting pitching, it is a positive, but you also don't want to get too deep into it as well.
I think the question for me is how much more do you start to extend Auger out? I think that's one of the things that people get missed, this idea that you can be a reliever or a starter. But you got to stretch a guy out to go deep in a ball game. We saw Durangelo go over 100 pitches yesterday. Auger has – man, you're the difference in an AM signal and an FM signal. You know, an AM signal, you can get St. Louis, it just kind of keeps going, and it maybe just kind of fades slightly. And next thing you know, you're 800 miles away from the tower, but it's still there. But it's never great.
It's crackle.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Well, the FM signal is really, really clear, and then like in 1 mile, it's gone, right?
Yeah.
Brooks Auger has been the FM signal of pitching for us. Like, he is really good, 60, 65, and when he's done.
He's done. And I would argue that that may be the best thing in the world, because it takes away all doubt and all decision-making power. It's because when I look out there, and even Durangelo too. I mean, we've seen this out of Durangelo. Even though he did fight through yesterday, I thought he went another inning more than he probably even thought he was going to go. But at least they show their cards. At least if I'm Justin Parker sitting in the dugout, I know when they lose it.
There it is.
Okay, all right, boys. There's that high and outside from Auger's 3 feet outside. Okay, it's time to go get him. At least they give you a sign, and instead of sitting there saying, man, maybe he can gut through this guy. Maybe he can get past the next two. Maybe we can get the matchup. We got a left-handed hitter coming up three down. No, go get him.
Well, it only works if you learn from it.
Right.
It only works if you're willing to pay attention to the obvious.
And I think you've done that, really. I mean, you've seen in instances this year where they've left people out there for a batter too long or two batters too long.
And that's one of the things that's hardest to do. From a pitching standpoint, I was reading the other day, you know, one of the Facebook groups. I don't know why, but I did, and I apologize for doing it. And in some of the comments, it was like, well, why do we leave the guy in too long? And then the next comment was, well, we went and got the guy too early. I mean, the thing about a pitching coach and when to go get a pitcher is one of the – I mean, if you can solve that riddle – I mean, there are pitching coaches in the Major League Baseball. It's the same situation. You just don't know when to go get a guy. Do you leave him in too long? Do you go get him too early?
I think the thing that goes into that people miss is the toll you take warming a guy up.
Right.
And so there's a guy that we hear a lot during ball games who, I mean, a guy, we're in the fifth, guy walks somebody.
Go get him.
Start screaming, go get him, go get him. Well, that sounds cool, but if you didn't have any indication that he was about to lose it, you know, back-to-back walks, what have you, it's not a video game. You don't just hit the button and you got a guy ready, because there's two things. One, it takes time. And then two, you know, which is why you go out there, take some visits. What a lot of people don't know, if you go out there, though, and you talk and you don't make the change, once you leave the mound, you're stuck with that guy for the next hitter.
And we said that last week about Tyler Davis, or 2 weeks ago about Tyler Davis. And let's go back yesterday. You've got the lead in the eighth inning. I want to hear from both of you. I mean, what did you think about Tyler Davis coming? I had no problem with him coming in the eighth inning because it was a five-run game. What say you?
I was surprised. I'm not mad, because I think part of the challenge becomes, you know, we like to sit there and think we've got the game in hand, but that's pretty precarious.
Well, that's what I was about to say.
It's, and imagine if somebody, you know, a bloop and a blast and – next thing you know, the game's a little tighter. People are going to be, why did you put him in? Go get him. Why didn't you take him out? And I think, you know, I think the other thing about it is we're still at a spot where we want guys to have some clean innings and as little leverage as possible. You know, Davis had to pitch in a big moment just a couple of days ago in Jackson against Ole Miss. If you got to use him, I'd rather use – look, not all pitches are created equal, right?
Nope.
It is a lot harder and takes a lot more toll on you when you're throwing with a guy on third or you're throwing in a one-run lead, things like that. He just had some clean innings out there. You got him in, you got him out. And if you hold him, if you don't use him, and let's say you go to a young guy and they walk somebody, hit the next guy, and somebody runs one.
This is a two-run game in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
Changes everything.
And everything comes back in. Conversely, let's say you've held him and you never had to go to him, never had to use him. What if you go run rule today? Then you went your whole weekend without using him in anything that's remotely a leveraged situation, and you still got to trust Tyson Harden, right? And you got him today.
Well, that's what I was going to say, too. I mean, you probably don't make that move if you've used Tyson Harden on Friday night.
And I kind of going back to what you said, I don't mind it. I didn't think that they were going to go to him just because he did pitch Wednesday. And that's the gap between Wednesday and Saturday is not, you know, insurmountable to where you can't throw any. But I kind of thought they would go with someone else. But then again, you look at it and you think you're really not at a luxury of, you know, risking any games. You still want to take any victory that you can get at this point in the season, you know, moving towards, you know, boosting your RPI and then trying to get back into that hosting conversation. So I think the decision to bring Tyler Davis in yesterday with, you know, even with the lead you had was, I thought it was the right decision.
What's so crazy is we're in fifth place in the league. We were in fifth place going into yesterday's game too. And right now you're two games ahead of sixth place in the SEC overall. And with what LSU has been able to do down in Baton Rouge this weekend, which is amazing, and to win two against Texas A&M, who has been so good, now you're a game back of Texas A&M. Okay. Now, the thing about it, Texas A&M is the closest team you can get to in the top four. You're a game behind them. Nothing's completely out of reach. You're only three games out of first place, which is in itself amazing. But if you can get in the top four, then all of a sudden you start talking about buys and double buys in the SEC tournament, the top four seed, which would be really big. But I go back to today. I know everybody wants to sweep and you want to win every game. But
no, there's no but.
Oh, you do.
There is no but. You have to win today's game.
Do you really?
Yes.
Do you feel like – okay. So you feel like you have to win today's game?
Well, I mean, let's look at it. You got a team who is depleted. And we can talk about whether those guys will be back, but they're not going to be back at the same speed. They're not going to be at their full potential today, even if those guys are on the field. The second thing is this. There are times there are swing games in your season. We've lost a lot of swing games. We need a good feeling coming out of this weekend. Sweeping is a big deal because here's the problem. Next week's big boy baseball.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Even if you lose today and just take one next weekend, I'm talking about from a macro situation. You're looking at micro. From an overall standpoint, even if you lose today, take two out of three from Alabama, you get one against Arkansas, your RPI is going to be good enough. Then that last weekend against Missouri, you take care of business. I mean, Alabama's RPI, you don't want to talk about, you know, catching lightning in a bottle. Is a team that's a top 15 RPI team that, you know, gets food poisoning when they come into the ball. Into your stadium, and then all of a sudden, because then you've got, you know, top 15 wins RPI wise against the team. And then going back to your point about Tyson, about Tyler Davis, you know, Alabama is a really good offensive team. Even the guys they brought in yesterday at the bottom of the order,
Hammeter
comes in the game. I think he's only started seven games all year, and he had three hits and just murdered the ball.
One of those landed out by you, Lewis.
Yeah, well, I think he was like 6 for 36 on the year, and then came in had a 3 for 4 day. That's just
yeah. And then you know, the guy at the bottom of the order cranks one, and so it's just this is not a bad baseball team on paper, and that's the good thing. All right, so today Brooks Auger. They've got a right-hander going. Looking up and down our lineup right now, Hunter Hines having that big stick in the cleanup spot, he's becoming to be the guy where teams have to worry about him two batters ahead in the way that they pitched to Mershon. You know, DJ has got some holes in the swing this weekend, and sooner or later he's going to come out of that. But Hunter Hines right now is playing exactly what we thought Hunter Hines could be like when this season began.
And that's exactly – that's what you have to have. We talked about it last weekend, Charlie, where the top of your order, you know, when you have one or two hits between the first four hitters, that's just – what did we say? It was unacceptable. And so for – you know, you keep that same lineup with Chance leading off and then two through four being the same, but – you keep that lineup, and then everything starts to come into fold. Everybody starts hitting the ball. You know, you hit the ball on screws a few times last weekend on Friday night, and then, of course, with Chance the whole weekend. But everything starts to fall. And I think now with Hunter Hines starting to hit, that's just another piece to the puzzle that's really going to help along the way.
Hey, you and I talked about it last weekend because we moved Chance to the top of the order, and we asked each other the question, rough weekend. I think we were both of the mindset – stick with it. I think we were both of the mindset that we might not stick with it. Were you glad to see Chance stay there?
I was. I was, yeah. Kind of like we talked, like we said last week, is that, you know, you mentioned that Lemonis may not, you know, we want to see it keep going, and I think that it's paid dividends to keep that lineup the way it is.
It seems to me like Chris Lemonis is being more patient this year than he has been the past 2 years. And here's what I mean by that, is you start talking about video games and going and getting guys on the mound. First time they walk somebody and the guy starts screaming, go get him, and you leave them in. But it's also the same situation of allowing some guys to play through it. You think back to Bryce Chance last weekend, who had the struggles at the plate. I mean, he was 0 for 16 before getting a hit on Wednesday night against Ole Miss. Now he comes out this weekend, he's hitting the ball well. He gives you that formidable guy at the top of the order. All right, I said on Friday night, I hit the cough button, you know, between innings, and looked at Charlie when Amani Larry came around third base and got picked behind, on that pick behind. And I was like, it was not good base running. It was right there in front of him. And I was like, that may be the last time we see Amani Larry for a while. But he left him in, and what does Amani do the next inning? Grand slam. You think about Logan Kohler, about some of the situations he's gone through over at third base, about, you know, he was having difficulty fielding a ball a few weeks ago, and his hitting had not been very good. You stick with him, allow him to play through that. Kohler has gotten some big hits. Now, even though, you know, he probably should have slid into second base yesterday.
You know what? We're going to wash those pants anyway. Let's go ahead and get them dirty.
Slide. Yeah, so we've made some errors. All right, that brings up a point. And Lewis, you know, Charlie and I are old codgers here. I mean, you see the game as it is today. You know, the thing about the good old days, Charlie and I have the good old day-itis. You know, it was always better in the good old days back when we were playing, you know. It just seems to me like we see it not just from us, but from other teams. We saw it out of Alabama yesterday, not completing a rundown well at all. You've seen some base-running blunders this weekend from us. It just seems to me like this is not just a Mississippi State issue. You're seeing it around college baseball. And I know you and your dad are real big with the Cotton States League. Do y'all see that much in the summer where you walk in and you look at some guys and say, have y'all ever been, like, taught baseball?
It's funny you say that, because that was, like, one of the biggest things my dad would preach during Cotton States. And kind of going back to the Kohler thing is, like, if you don't slide, like, and it's a close play, they're just going to call you out for not sliding. And so that's what I always go back to. It's just, like, you have to do the little things anyway.
If you're not out, you deserve to be out.
Yeah, if you don't slide, then your tail deserves to be sitting back on the bench regardless. But you're going to have to do the little things anyway at some point, so why not go ahead and start doing it at an early age for Cotton States? And that's, yeah, kind of like you said, even in the college league today, people just aren't it's like the little things aren't as, you know, stressed anymore.
And going back to my point, is you see Kohler going and standing, and, you know, you think back to the old fire and brimstone days of, I get that guy out of here. You think about and Chris Lemonis went nuts in the dugout when that happened yesterday. But you start thinking about Amani with the base running blunder, and we've seen that over the last couple of weeks. It seems like Chris Lemonis has allowed this to kind of play out a little bit more. And, Charlie, am I wrong for saying it just appears he has more patience?
Well, it's probably easier to have patience when you're 14-9 in the league instead of about 6-18, right? You know, people hear – look, coaches aren't immune to hearing the things that are said, not just to them but to their players. And it's been – we like to think that we sometimes, quote, have the best fans. Sometimes we just have the most passionate. And passion can manifest itself in a lot of ways, right? And sometimes that's frustration. And – the past 2 years, they've heard it, and I think you could see it wearing on him at the end of last year, because you could tell, too, like when he would go make a pitching change, you could just see it coming out of him. And Chris Lemonis isn't a bad – he's actually a very likable, soft guy, but when, man, you go see him make a pitching change, he was ready to take somebody's head off, right? And I think it's hard to play baseball. I think it's hard to hit in that environment. I think it's hard to pitch in that environment. And I think having Justin Parker handle the pitching has made a big difference. But I think winning helps you win. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does.
I think the walls kind of close in when you start losing around here.
You just loosen up a little bit. Baseball is a game you got to – what's the old Bull Durham? Fear and arrogance? I mean, you got to play this game with a swagger. You've got to play this game loose. Do you know who else is passionate, Charlie, about their job?
I thought you were going to ask if they had fear and arrogance.
Well.
I hope that's not right.
Well, they have
– if you're on the sales lot, do you have to have a little fear and arrogance?
You do. The fear that somebody's going to go across the street and buy a subpar vehicle. Or you got to have the arrogance of knowing, you know what, I'm going to help this person out better than anybody else can. And that's what they do at Cannon Ford of Starkville on Highway 182, just east of Starkville. Chris Keene and his fine staff, new or used cars, they got a bunch on the lot right now. Also, the service center, they're open on Saturday mornings. If you need an oil change, need your tires rotated, anything in the service center. And then the body shop as well. Our good friends at Cannon Ford of Starkville, they're doing it right. We're also in the Farm Bureau studios. Farm Bureau, go with the home team at Farm Bureau. Check them out at favorites.com. They have agents all across the state of Mississippi. Home, life, auto, whatever you need. Henry Hamill, he sets the tone at the top as far as the sales with our good friends at Farm Bureau. And so go with the home team, our friends at Farm Bureau. All right, what do you want to see out of Auger today? Five innings? Six innings?
I think, and I was looking at Ben Hess's stats. I mean, he's good for 4-5, so I think you want to match that. It'll be good to get a quality start out of him, but you also want to, you know, you hadn't used a whole lot in your bullpen, but you also want to preserve that a little bit moving forward, or for today anyway. So I think 4-5 innings for sure.
I'd like to see him pitch into the sixth. I'm not saying go six complete. I'd like to see him take the mound in the sixth. Because as we start to think about going forward, let's think about a regional, whether it's here or somewhere else. And let's say, and we don't expect this, but Cal Steven is roughed up on a Friday, and you got to spend some of your bullpen on Friday. Well, let's say, you know, you got to throw some guys on Saturday with Gerangelo. But let's say you get a win, right? Then what are you going to do, right? If you've used your bullpen on Friday and never mind the fact of potentially having to come back and play a second game and go four games into that regional, somebody besides Cal Steven and Gerangelo may be called upon to have to give you those six. We might need the Keith Dilgard moment, Bart, where a guy comes in and just pitches out of his mind and gets you a win. I think it's hard to do that if you don't keep stretching Auger out.
Yeah, you know, Dilgard was actually the guy I was thinking about early on, because you're going to have a Dilgard. To me, Pico Khan is Keith Dilgard when you start thinking about a regional
situation.
Set the
scene for Lewis here on who Keith Dilgard
is. Okay, are you familiar with Keith Dilgard?
I'm not.
This is 19.
He wasn't born, I don't think.
1997. What year were you born?
2003.
Okay, so this was a long time ago.
The generational divide.
Okay, so we play in a regional here. It was the old 16 regional days. 1998 was the last year of the 16 regional. And everybody thinks about beating Washington, and we had to beat Washington twice to win that regional and go to the College World Series. But when you look back at that regional, Georgia Tech was the number one overall seed in the nation, even though we were hosting the regional as a two seed, which was crazy to think about in today's world.
Back then you used to bet on a regional.
Yeah, you bet on a regional. Of course, we have a bunch of fans, and so we could just outpay everybody. You know, NCAA loved us. So Georgia Tech had lost early in the regional. We're playing Georgia Tech in an elimination game to get back to play Washington. And we had a guy, Keith Dilgard. And back in those days, we had front-line pitchers, you know, Jeremy Jackson, and you start, you know, Eric DeBose was the horse. But you had Keith Dilgard, who goes out against Georgia Tech and just shoves it. And that's one of the more overlooked games in the history of Mississippi State baseball. You don't get to Washington and beat Chris Magruder without beating Georgia Tech. And what Dilgard was able to do is your third or fourth guy to go out there and just shut it down. And that's why I'm saying a guy like Pico Khan. All right, let me ask you this question. You don't play a midweek game this week. Pico's been the midweek guy. I've been throwing two or three innings. If you had to have Pico today, do you use him just to get him, just to dip the toe into conference play?
Why not?
Yeah. That's my thought. Exactly. Why not? I mean, he's not going to throw Tuesday or Wednesday. and he's had enough time in between his last outing against Ole Miss. So, and obviously, like you're talking about, you want to see that fourth guy come into fold. So, yeah, I think it could only help him to get him some work.
Well, let's add to that, too. It's not like this will be the first time he's ever been on the mound. Meaning, you know, it's one thing if you're saying, boy, we're going to put this freshman in this moment. He's been out there, and there's some value to having been around in that situation. By the way, I pulled the stats. Keith Dilgard in that game against Georgia Tech, that's a game we win 10-2. Here's what Dilgard does. 8 innings pitched, scatters 8 hits, allowed 2 earned runs, walked 1, struck out 10. That's just.
And then you had Hank coming out of the bullpen. That was just a regional that we needed. Every inning, we needed that many innings worth of pitching. And we would – I don't – and you know, we win in the ninth as far as DeBose has to pitch the complete game on Monday when we play in the championship game. And if we'd have had to play another inning in that tournament, I'm not exactly sure what we do. And so going back to how that compares to this year's team is even last weekend when we had the lead in the Sunday game against Vanderbilt and then you give up the lead, I may have sent a text and that you were associated with, Charlie, that said – point blank, I'm not sure we have enough pitching to cover 27 innings on a weekend.
So let me ask you that. You brought up an interesting stat when you came in this morning. We are now, what, second in the league in conference games only after yesterday in ERA?
Second in the league in conference only ERA, only Arkansas. Arkansas, and we're talking about SEC only games. Lewis, here's what we do. We look at SEC only stats at this time of year. We don't care if you played the Citadel early in the year, not knocking our fine brethren. But when you get into conference play, to me, those are the stats that matter, and Charlie thinks the same way. Arkansas's ERA is 3.71. They're the only sub-4 ERA in league games. We're 4.48 now.
I'm saying take out Hagen Smith. And
oh, that's what I'm saying.
That looks a little different,
we're
too.
We're in second place in SEC ERA.
So am I right that our league-only ERA is better than our overall ERA?
That is correct. No.
Or our ranking, excuse me. If you were to look at all games,
we're fourth
in the league in ERA.
Right.
We are second in league only. Does that speak to either A, our pitching has gotten better as we've gotten into league play, or B, speak to the lack of depth that we have because we're not as effective perhaps throwing in midweek or non-conference situations, or is it a combination of all the above, or maybe other teams, as we've gotten into the season, starting to tax their bullpens and not figure out who they can trust either?
I think it's a little all the above because I start looking at some of these other teams like Texas A&M. You know, Texas A&M has a decent pitching staff, but their ERA in league play is 4.91. They're ahead of us overall. You know, they're sub-4 right now overall, but 4.91 in the league. I think everybody else is just coming back to earth a little bit.
Or is it that just A&M score so many runs that
they don't care?
By the eighth inning, it's like, you know, get the TV guys out there.
I think that every point you made can be true. I think the one that we want to build on is that we're just getting better. And I think, you know, that is true. And not only just from a pitching standpoint, but from a hitting standpoint, each player is just, you know, getting better as the season's about to come to a close. And that's just, you know, going back, it's a confidence thing. You know, it's you get a little bit of confidence as a baseball player, and you know everything's about to start getting rolling for you.
You know, who else has confidence?
I mean, there's a lot of people that have confidence. I have confidence, Charlie.
You know, who should have confidence?
Who?
Our friends at Maroon and Company.
Hey, they do.
And you know why?
Because you've got a Bulldog Initiative sweatshirt on this morning.
I do. And, you know, so yesterday I go over and I'm sitting at Strange Brew and talking to somebody, and a college-age girl walks in, getting ready for study for finals. She has a Bulldog Initiative hat on and almost came out of my chair. You know, hey, that's a – and she probably wondered, what?
You know who I am.
So, yeah, no, hey, Maroon & Company, by the way, if you are a Bulldog – I'm going to repeat this because I've had several people reach out to me. We have our digital membership cards. Lewis will talk more about the student membership that we're working on right now. It's going to be really cool. But membership cards, if you are a member and you don't have one and you want to know where it is, shoot me a message. cwinfield@bulldog.ms. And what I will do is I'll get you the link so you can get your membership card. Because if you're here in Starkville today and you had a membership card, you could go over to Two Brothers and you could get 10% off. You could also go to Maroon & Company and you could get 15% off there. And so I'm telling you, man, Wyatt Craig, the guys at Maroon & Company, if you are coming to Starkville, you need a place to go get Mississippi State gear. You want to go get Bulldog Initiative gear, go see them. They've got all sorts of Bulldog Initiative gear. And, hey, if you use the code NIL10, you know, when you go up there, you say, hey, I got a code. And they'll say, great, what is it? Say NIL10. You're going to get 10% off. 5% is going to be donated back to us. When you buy Bulldog Initiative gear, half the profits from that are coming to us. It is making a significant difference. And, look, man, wearing what the cool kids wear.
Lewis, do you think there's any chance that Charlie actually answers his own email? I'm guarantee you he's got about – I'm going to guarantee you he's got about two interns sitting in the back that answer emails.
What do you think I was doing in the seventh inning?
What, you were answering emails yesterday?
Pretty much.
Well,
not yesterday. That was Friday while you were busy talking about the bird.
It was a dove. It was a
– somebody was like tweeting us yesterday about it being a pigeon.
No, it was a dove.
Do we even have pigeons around here?
I'm sure we possibly do. I saw a bat the other day down in Anawoya. I never see a bat. I saw a bat the other day.
No, say, if you come to a baseball game or football game, if you look up in the lights, you'll occasionally see bats up there.
Really?
Yeah. I actually had one on my back porch recently. I think they're generally good things to have.
Yeah, I don't think they're, you know, as bad. Did you watch Batman as a kid? I didn't.
You're talking about like the old – see, like, so Lewis's generation would be different. That's when – the Batman came out that was all on the – it was every cell was framed against a black background, so it had a darker character to it.
Yeah.
We were more of the old Adam West, Batman and Robin. When they'd hit somebody, Powell would pop up on the screen and stuff. All right, so, Lewis, here's what I want to know from you. At the ball games this weekend, there were a lot of students out there. What is the vibe from the student crowd right now on where this baseball team is?
I think everyone's just excited that good quality baseball is being played in Starkville again. I mean, to be honest, I mean, you had everybody ready to hop off the wagon a few weeks ago after the Ole Miss series, and so I think you're kind of starting to reel them back in. And as if you know, you just keep winning, and we'll be playing in Starkville here in June in a couple weeks, and so I think you'll have everybody back on board.
So here, let's say we win today, and we roll into next week in Arkansas, and we get swept. Will they come back for the Missouri series?
When you say, will they come back, you mean like physically come to the game or just be like invested?
All right. So I like the question there. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, everybody's school, going home.
Yeah, school's out. School's out. I mean, I think the crowd this weekend could have even been – better than it was, or better than it has been, had school. Because, I mean, half the university has already gone home just because they're done with exams. So, I think I'd like to believe that they'll still be invested, even if you get swept at Arkansas or against Arkansas this weekend or this coming weekend. But they may not be physically at the game for the Missouri series just because – everyone's gone home.
Then you got to think that Missouri series in 2 weeks, of course, is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because it's the last SEC weekend of the year. So you got a Sunday off, Charlie. 2 weeks from now, you got Sunday off.
Today, ball game being moved up to noon.
Yeah.
We're going to try to get this one in. We have to play this game.
Oh, I agree.
I probably would have played yesterday.
Well, and I go back to my point about, you know, what I said early on was looking at an overall picture. Yeah, you need to play this game today. You do need to win this game today. From a right now standpoint, winning this game would be massive. And then if you could win today and then get LSU's help down in Baton Rouge, then all of a sudden you go in the last two weekends, you're tied with Texas A&M for fourth place in the league right
now. I'll just say this because I know I've seen people talk about, hey, we could be fourth, we could be third. If you told me right now we're going to be fifth in the league, playing good baseball.
Buy it.
I'm in.
Yep.
Lock it up. Let's go home.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm telling you, just being in the top five in the league right now.
From where we were.
And I go back to the point, you make this statement about have we gotten better. I mean, I look back, and if you can, where we were early or mid-February compared to where we are now with some of these guys, with where, how much better they have gotten. You talk about, you know, we're not talking, you know, Tyler Davis and Tyson Harden started a little bit slow this year. When we talk about the transformation they made from last year to this year, you're seeing in-season just maturation, which is hard to do.
And I don't think we've seen very much of that around here. I don't think you see very much of that in baseball, period.
No, you don't.
I mean, obviously there are players. You know, we always knew Rowdy Jordan was going to start, that he'd be hitting about .180 when conference play rolled around and about .380 when the season was over. R.J. Gager went through that. Scotty DeBrul went through that. But it's bigger than any one guy being in a slump and starting. And I think, to me, the whole key from here is you have – like, to me, I think there are two keys. One, Hunter Hines has got to stay hot because it changes the order. Then a lot of things that factor into that. Hizak hitting the ball helps him stay hot. And then the other thing is – I think we still have to have somebody, or maybe it's two somebodies. Go back to your point. Maybe it's Pico and Auger, but somebody has got to kind of stand up and really, really not just claim the start, but give you some length on a Sunday. What's your key?
My key moving forward. Well, you know, when we talked last weekend, I said you're almost in must-win mode. And so the way I view the rest of the year is that you just have to take it one game at a time and just take care of business. I mean, you're not going to be favored next weekend against Arkansas, but the ideal situation is that you go down there, or you go up there and you take one. So my key is just handle your business the way that you should, and everything should work out.
And the thing about doing that, the thing about going to Arkansas next week, and they're going to be – they'll be the top-ranked team in the country when the polls come out this week. Offensively, they have not been a great team. They have pitched it extremely well. So what does that mean? You're going to be in close games. Hopefully, you're going to be in close games. Or all it takes is a poke. All it takes is Hunter Hines or Dakota Jordan running into a ball with a guy or two on base. That's all it takes.
All right. So you just hit something. Let me ask you this. Is it fair to say that one of the keys is Dakota Jordan hitting for power in league and tournament play? I mean, so if you look at it right now, four of his home runs have come in league play. Now, he's still hitting. He's just not hitting for power. Do you care?
Well, the thing about this, as the season has gone on, and you and I talked about this on the broadcast yesterday, about how more clear your scout becomes. And I think right now, I don't think Alabama was not throwing him a fastball. I mean, they busted him in with a fastball that even if he gets a bat on it yesterday, he's so on the plate so tight, if he gets a bat on it, he's going to pull it foul. And so they bust him in with a fastball. I think that may have been one of the only fastballs they have shown him this weekend. And so as the season goes on, Dakota is going to have to make the adjustment.
All right, so talking about adjustments, we saw Hunter Hines hit left-handed pitching this weekend. You know, so his first two home runs.
Yep.
In that game on Friday, those were against the left-hander.
And he came into the weekend batting just .220 left on left.
And so is that a guy maybe starting to figure out his kryptonite?
No, absolutely. It's about figuring out what the other pitcher throws, but understanding what your scout is too, and understand how he's going to attack your scout.
That's the level I think that guys have a hard time adjusting to from high school to college.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in high school, guys go stand around, they say, what's this guy going to throw? But there's a second level to that once you get to college.
And going back to your point, I remember in women's basketball, and I really never captured this in my mind until I saw this several years ago broadcasting, is we went to Xavier and played Xavier. And it's been, you know, 12, 13 years ago now, so I guess they don't mind me saying this. We have a former assistant coach with a friend of his who was at Xavier. And so after the game was over, they swapped scouts. Okay, so we got the scout that Xavier had on us. They got the scout we had on them. And if you start reading somebody else's scout on you, sometimes it's like, oh, wow. The things that become evident as someone is scouting you, you're like, I didn't completely realize this. Hey, you start talking about, you know, we had a great conversation with Dell Unser a couple of years ago, and he was talking about Ted Williams and about how when you start looking at a pitcher, if you don't think those – I mean, those guys back in the old days had no idea. If I was going with depth with my left foot going out of the windup, and Ted Williams would say, if that guy steps back far, you can tell it's going to be a fastball because a guy steps back – that guy steps back further on his fastball on his windup.
You know, that was a really interesting conversation because he was basically saying – you'd see that. I thought of Tony Gwynn. You know, they used to do the deal with young pitchers with the Padres. They go put them in the cage with Tony Gwynn. Before the ball's even left their hands, he's calling the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, curveball, and then just drive him crazy. But he could pick up on all those things. You know, that's been one of the things I've wondered about some of our guys is when you start to look at improvements is have we cleaned up tipping some pitches? You know, there were a lot of times – I remember Coach Polk kind of giving it the old, well, they seem to be seeing it well. Either we just threw it really, really straight or maybe there were some indicators built in.
All right, let me ask you this question. You saw Jim Schlossnagel say early this week – over Texas A&M. And now he was very vague with it, and he said, hey, there's a team in the league. I don't know who it is. And let me tell you this. It could be anybody. And if it was anybody, nothing will surprise me in this world who it would be. You got a team hitting 100 points higher at home than they are on the road. Somebody's using some cameras. Is that more paranoia or is that more I know what's going on?
No, I think that's just idiocy.
Yeah.
And here's why I say that.
Now, Jim's full of it, too, now. He's full of himself as well.
Yes.
You talk about not the fear, but the arrogance part.
well, think about this, though. When you start to go back to the Houston Astros, the most documented, just bad people, if you want to be real about it, right, the Houston Astros, the greatest cheating entity next to the Boston Red Sox in the history of the game.
Red Sox? What did they do?
I don't know. Just seemed like a thing to say. So, but if you want to look at what they were doing, though, they're having to do that stuff in a hurry with people who knew what they were doing with really good technology. Now, there are no signals going in. So, back then, the guy's flashing the one, flashing the two, wiggling the finger. Now, nobody's calling a pitch. They're looking at their wrist, right? And then...
You don't think some IT guys kind of tapped in?
Look, if we've got some Einstein in our dugout who has been able to sit there, intercept a signal from wristwatch to wristwatch, then successfully signal it in, I want to invite them to look at the swing and misses on breaking pitches by our 3 and 4 hitters and tell me we've been cheating to help them. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do we want to throw something because we're chasing breaking balls down? If we knew that was coming and we're still chasing it, then, dear heavens, we need to blow up the draft next year. all right. Hey, you brought up one thing, and I know we got to go here quick. I thought Ross Dellinger had some interesting stories this week about emergence of revenue sharing.
Yeah, revenue sharing. It said it would – if it comes into effect, of course, they're in the final processes right now trying to broker a deal right now between the NCAA and a couple of these lawsuits, and it could cost each of the Power Five schools upwards of around $30 million a year or $300 million over a 10-year period, and it would not go into effect until the fall of 2025. And so you're still looking at, you know, a year and a half away before a rev share would come into play. Is that the same article you read, Charlie?
Yeah, it is, and – I thought a few things were interesting because people talk about it coming in fall of 25. You know, a lot of those decisions need to be made in November and December of 24 because if you want to look at how the portal windows work in football, Monday after the Egg Bowl – no, not Monday after the Egg Bowl. It's the next Monday, the Monday after the SEC championship game. Portal opens, and it's going to be open for a month. All the way up to, I don't know what it'll be next year. Depends on how the days fall. January 2nd, 3rd, somewhere in there. Which makes for a great Christmas, by the way. So, but if you put the rev share in place, you better get to working on it now, which could be ambitious. So, when they say fall of 25, we'll see. But I tell you what it does. I think it backs up something I've been trying to say, and that is this. We were in a period where we knew what rules were. There were rules, we knew what they were, and a lot of people ignored them or worked to get around them. We are headed to a system where there are some rules and some structure, and people are still going to work to get around them. But you at least are going to have going from structure to some level of structure and revenue sharing. Where we are now in the NIL world, in the unregulated transfer portal world, is effectively this gap period. And so people ask me all the time, why should we be investing in NIL? Rev share is coming. Because I compare it to NASCAR. We're basically in the caution period right now. We're in this period where everybody's getting in the pits and they're reshuffling. When the restart comes, you don't want to be at the back of the line. I think the people who are smart realize that you have an opportunity right now to do what you've never had the chance to do, which is to invest and to go all in and try to pass some people while they're figuring things out, so that when the restart comes and we all start back sharing roughly the same amount of money, because that's the idea, right, is that we're going to be sharing the same money, puts people back on a more level playing field. But if you'll go all in right now, you can pass some people while they're busy getting tires and gas.
Yeah, because there are a lot of schools out there that don't have it structured well.
There's a bunch. Everybody likes to act like they do.
Yeah. But they really don't. Hey, we talked about on Friday, our good friends at Heartland Catfish. Heartland producing the finest U.S. farm-raised catfish you can possibly want. It all started in the Mississippi Delta over in Itabena. All the way from their ponds to your plate, they serve it at great restaurants around the South. Fan and Johnny's, I actually had somebody text me yesterday and said they had been to Fan and Johnny's and about how great the catfish was at Fan and Johnny's. And I talked about on the show on Friday about Taylor Ricketts. She's a great chef over in Greenwood. She does a great job with that catfish. And they get it locally from our good friends at Heartland Catfish over in Itabena. And so if you're in the Mississippi Delta and you want to try something, if you haven't been to Fan and Johnny's, you need to go to Fan and Johnny's. And so a great place. And also brought to you by our friends at Country Pleasin' Sausage. Country Pleasin' made right here in the state of Mississippi down in Florence on Highway 49 at Country Meat Packers. They're continuing to grow. All their barbecue sauces or slop sauces are all in Walmarts now around the Southeast. And so they're just continuing to expand that brand. And you just can't beat the great handicraft. Is that a good way of saying what?
Handicraft?
Handicraft? That's not a good word.
They use that one up your way? Handicraft?
Well, it's handicraft. It's handcrafted. It's handicraft. But
handiwork?
Handiwork, handicraft. I just made a word up.
Products.
Right. So that's what Henry Cooper has done. His handicraftedness of making sausage is second to none.
There you go.
All right.
Do y'all cook out in the outfield? Do the students cook at all? I mean,
yeah.
Do you have grill with your group?
We have a grill. We have a rig, Chairman.
All right, so is it gas or charcoal?
It's gas.
So how packed is it out there in right field? Because when we're sitting there in the booth looking out there, it looks just like a gob of people. Can you move around?
That's exactly what it is. That's a great way to describe it. It is a gob of people. I mean, unless you're at the very front of the rig, you can't even see the game.
Really?
Here's my question. If we were to ratio this thing out between baseball interest and love life and dating interest and potential thereof, what's the ratio? Like, how many people are looking at the field and how many people are trying to plan ahead?
Conversing.
Yeah, It's more of a social event for everyone out in the outfield, I think.
Anyway. Now, are there some hardcore baseball people mixed in there?
There are, and those are the people who get frustrated that they can't see the game because they're not at the front of the rig.
How do you decide who can invite people out there? I mean, those rigs are not very big. And then all of a sudden, if Charlie is a festive guy, he has a lot of friends. If Charlie brings eight friends, that takes up the whole rig.
How do you decide who gets to come out to the rig? Well, I mean, it's pretty much free roam once you get into the stadium, so you can just walk around. Because, you know, all the rigs on that second tier, like all the fraternity rigs, there's like a little walkway that's wide enough for people to hang out in. So that's where a lot of people hang out, and obviously they're just socializing, not watching the game.
Hey, I will say this from being in the outfield. I think the second level – is highly underrated.
Completely.
You kind of want to be on the fence, and I get that. But if you're on the second level, you have two things.
You can have a cover.
First thing is you can have a covering. And our friend Henry Hamill, being fair complected, typically has a really good shade cover out there. But then you've got the big walkway behind you that really adds some depth to your spot.
Yeah, it does. And you can actually position your grill. I've seen people do this where they position their grill where they're actually standing outside the rig. Oh, hey, we're also brought to you by our friends at Nutrient Ag Solutions and DynaGrow Seed. No matter where home is, DynaGrow Seed is made to perform on your acres with proven track record for consistent performance year after year. DynaGrow Seed delivers innovative seed solutions to maximize your local acreage. For over 30 years, DynaGrow Seed has worked with local growers to find the best seed solutions for your farms. And so if you're doing some planting over the Mississippi Delta or the Black Belt here in eastern Mississippi, getting ready to book your seed, also fertilizers as well, book your seed today at Nutrient Ag Solutions or visit DynaGrowSeed.com to learn more. That's our good friends at Nutrient Ag Solutions and DynaGrow Seeds. Anyway. All right, boys. Hey, we gotta turn this thing around. We gotta get to the ballpark. We got game three. We got a broadcast.
All right, Lewis. What's your prediction for today?
I want to say it's gonna be an offensive day just because it's Sunday, but you never know. I thought we were gonna come out and dominate like we did Friday night yesterday, but we kind of sputtered there for a little bit, but we took care of business. So my prediction is that we take care of business.
Well, that's a fair thing to say. Now, for me, I think one of the things that has been overlooked and just hasn't been seen, quite frankly, except in very brief glimpses, is that Alabama is not a bad offensive baseball team. And the odds of them going through an entire weekend without showing their ability to be a good baseball team, if they are healthy, although, again, some of the guys that got in yesterday looked pretty good. I think you've got a chance to give up some runs today. I think you're going to have to score.
And you better do it early. And here's the reason I say that. 2 o'clock today, 86% chance of rain at 2 o'clock today. Now, Lewis, you also, when you have to start factoring in offensive days, what's the wind going to do? The wind is blowing out to left, out of the south, 6 miles an hour. I say all that to say this. At times this year, when we have gotten to the ballpark and we take BP with the hard wind blowing out, sometimes we have changed our swings and we have not been very good in the game. Am I wrong for saying that, Charlie?
No, you aren't. And man, you would love to go have the data, but I would be willing to venture that we hit more home runs on days when there is not a pronounced wind out to left.
Than when there is. Yeah. All right. Hey, enjoyed it. Lewis, appreciate you hanging out with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Lewis Creekmore, Charlie Winfield, I'm Bart Gregory. We'll see you at the ballpark at noon today. Dogs go for the sweep against Alabama. You've been listening to Sunday Coffee.